Good morning.
Good morning.
The mayor has not shown up now yet, so we're going to get started, although he may be walking down the stairs.
The mayor has been delayed. It's probably in yoga.
So we will go ahead and start with the... Hey, there he is.
Go ahead and start.
So we'll take... So the attempt at a bloodless coup is over.
One rule of the mayor is you follow the mayor's watch.
No.
Sky clock, sorry.
The clock, that's the official clock.
Get one of those on your wrist, okay?
All right, first item is...
Mr. Brady made me do it.
Special counsel. Yeah. Okay. Special counsel meeting. The first item on the agenda is plat 11-1334, which is a replat of the Power Road and Baywood Avenue Medical Office Building, 300 block of South Power Road, located north and east of Power and Broadway Roads. This is 10S P80 to C2 lot. Mr. Wesley.
Mayor and Council, I might just go ahead and mention both plats. These are usually on your regular agenda, but these were not quite ready for Monday's agenda, but your next meeting is not until January to the 27th, and they kind of had some timelines, so we appreciate you having a special meeting this morning to consider these. You've seen the plat on this one for the office building on Power Road recently, and this is simply divides into two tracks.
Okay. Any questions from anyone?
Move to approve.
Have a motion from the Vice Mayor, second Councilman Kavanaugh. Why don't we do this? Let's just do both items, 1A and 1B. Vice Mayor Menz's motion to approve both items, 1A and 1B. Councilmember Kavanaugh seconds both items. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motions carry. We're going to take care of citizens' presence on the study session, so have a motion to adjourn from the Vice Mayor, second Councilmember Fenter. All in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you. We'll now call over the study session, May City Council, and we'll hear an update on the zoning code. Mr. Sheffield.
Mayor, council members. We are here today to give you a summary of sorts and ask if you agree that we're at a point where we can schedule this for possible adoption, introduction of ordinance and possible adoption. The ordinance has been vetted through the normal public hearing process. We've gone to the Planning and Zoning Board. We've gone to the Design Review Board. We've gone to the Historic Preservation. Thank you. Committee. We've received recommendations from all of those. And so today what we thought we would do was kind of go back to the beginning, so to speak, and remind the council of some of the goals that we were trying to achieve with this project. The involvement we've had with the citizenry and the public, the people who are interested in this project, what we've done to try to achieve those goals, and then we have a couple of last-minute items that came up during the vetting process that we'd like to talk to you and make sure that you agree with before we start publishing our final documents. Going back to the citizen involvement, when we started this project in September of 2006, almost 4.5 years ago, we started with stakeholder interviews. We talked to all of the people who use the zoning ordinance on a regular basis and asked them what they thought. And they gave us some ideas. And so we've gone back and we've taken a look at those. We held a community workshop in November of that year, basically asked the public what they thought. And we had a pretty good turnout. We had just under 100 people show up and tell us what they thought of the zoning ordinance. We've been had constant contact with the Development Advisory Forum during this process. We've been updating our web pages so that we've been trying to keep a direct link of communication with folks, as well as receiving emails from folks who've taken a look at those things. Recently, when we started our vetting process, we sent out 131,000 letters to every property owner within the city of Mesa, letting them know this is what we've thought. This is what we believe would be a reasonable update to the code. We've made presentations to interested citizens groups, including Rotary and others. We've made presentations to professional groups, including the local architects. We've had neighborhood and topical workshops where we've invited the public to come in and talk to us about these things, as well as receiving public comment, public hearings, and through the vetting process. So this is not something that we've done in a smoke-filled room behind closed doors. We've tried to involve the public as much as possible. Now I want to talk to you a little bit about the goals of the update, what we were trying to do when we started the project. The first thing was to make zoning easier to use. There's, as you're well aware, with all of the acronyms and everything else that goes into a zoning ordinance, there's oftentimes confusion as to what the code's trying to accomplish. We tried to streamline development reviews and including making it easier for the projects that the city wants to see go through to go through a process without having to sit here and go through some onerous hurdles. We wanted to address infill development. As the city begins to approach its build out, we wanted to make it easier for folks to go back and get those bypass parcels and develop on those sites. We wanted to achieve high levels of design quality, promote housing variety and choice, including more executive housing. We wanted to support economic growth, including jobs for the city, enhance the environmental quality, create a better environment for the community. We wanted to create flexibility, so every time some little nuance happens that might be a little bit different, we weren't taking things back to public hearing all the time. And finally, we wanted to enact the goals of the general plan that had been passed by the citizenry in 2002. First thing was ease of use, and this has to do with the first thing had to do with this organizational cleanup. We just wanted to make it easier for people to find things in the code, including the things that are most often used, put those right up front. We wanted to move the definitions to the end because those tend to be used the least. We wanted to alphabetize, create a logical order to these types of things, as well as use tables instead of narratives where possible. And this would be an example of that. If you, for example, looking for a place to find a hospital within the city of Mesa, you could go to the commercial districts, and within the table, you could pretty much figure out, just by looking at this table, that, one, they're permitted in neighborhood commercial districts, they're not permitted in the office districts, and if you want to find out more information, if you go to section 11-2010, then you pretty much find out what those are. So by doing this within a table format, we're able to sit here and do quite a bit in very little space. We wanted to consolidate the development standards, and what we mean by that is to sit here and put all of the uses in one area, all the standards that may apply to several districts in another area, and then any design guides led we had, we wanted to sit here and kind of eliminate any kind of waffleness, so to speak, for lack of a better term. So that instead of where we had in the existing code shoulds, we've eliminated those, and the ones that we need to keep, those are now shalls. We also use illustrations, the old adage about a picture's worth a thousand words. There's a great number of illustrations in there that illustrate or provide additional clarification as to what the words are trying to tell folks. In terms of streamlining reviews, goal two, we've increased the staff options. Several things have been delegated either to the advisory boards or to staff. Concurrent scheduling, for example, special use permits now require going to two boards. Under the proposal we've got before you now, the Planning and Zoning Board can decide on a special use permit. So you can do it with one application as opposed to going to multiple cases. We continue to use our hearing officer options. Those were implemented during the course of adding the Planning and Zoning Board planning hearing officer option was done during this. We continue to use the Zoning Administrator hearing officer as an option as well. We're also, consolidated applications was combining Planning and Zoning Board application with the special use permits, and concurrent scheduling would just be if you had a design review case and a P&Z case going at the same time, we would be able to double up on that advertising and hear those relatively soon to one another. Infill development. We continue to keep our DIP and our SKIP program. That seems to be relatively successful. We've reduced building setbacks in single residence districts to try to encourage additional reinvestment into sites that are already built. We've also increased our the lot coverage for that so that their people are able to build on larger lots. We've increased the number of mixed-use options, including putting multiple residence uses in commercial districts, small-scale commercial districts and commercial uses in industrial districts, as well as it doing small-scale retail and restaurant uses in office districts. And we've created a new MX district. In special use permits, we've, again, the limited commercial uses and residential sites. We've talked about that a little bit. We've also reduced street side setbacks, again, trying to sit here and make more of the lot available for development for people who would want to reinvest in those sites. In addition to that, we've also created a special zoning district called the ID district, the infill development district. And what this is specifically designed to do is to either develop or redevelop some of those bypass parcels and make it easier to do that. We encourage sustainable development practices by doing this. We're making use of existing infrastructure as well as existing assets that are already there. It also encourages mixing of uses. In many cases, the applicant will be able to sit here and tell us and write their own zoning code to actually make it work on that particular property. We believe this will encourage reinvestment into existing neighborhoods as well as minimize the need for development on the outskirts of the city. The types of incentives that we're able to offer for infill development include, again, the choice of land options. The developer will be able to write their own zoning code, their own land use code for that type of thing, and we'll negotiate that with staff. We will, again, negotiate both on- and off-site improvements. So this isn't just the zoning code. We'll also be able to take care of things like stormwater retention, right-of-way requirements, those types of things that might go along with this. We can potentially negotiate the streamlining of the review once they get their documents actually drawn, their construction documents. We can also potentially partner with off-site improvements. If the city has a project in that particular area, we may be able to talk to the developer and negotiate a partnering for their share of the cost for that, as well as the city doing the project and timing that so it works well for the project itself. Higher design quality. What we're trying to do is to sit here and reward those types of things. When we get a better design project, we try to provide administrative options for that. So rather than having to take everybody through public hearings every time they want to do something better, we try to reward them by streamlining the review process and taking that through staff. We've also offered cafeteria options. So instead of necessarily dictating design choices on this, we're giving people a menu of options to choose from. So And for example, in the case of the new RSL district or residential small lot district, we have some 10 choices and they choose 6 of those. So the idea being that not every single one of those design options would necessarily fit in that particular circumstance, but they fit the ones that are due there. And if they choose enough of them, we can reward them by allowing them to have a higher density project and get more return from their investment. We also have something called an alternative landscape plan, and I'll talk to you a little bit about this a little bit later on, because those are some of the options that the Design Review Board and P&Z added, but to try to reward creative design and landscape choices. Right now, under the landscape options, we have a ratio that says you shall plant X number of trees and X number of shrubs over a certain length of property line or a certain length of street. With the alternative landscape plan, we can sit here and reward creative landscape designs that achieve essentially the same thing without necessarily fitting the exact number of plants or exact number of trees that may be required for that particular project. And there's a criteria that we have for rewarding that. It also allows us to be a little bit more flexible when we have somewhat difficult landscape choices that have to be made because of the context of the particular site.
Gordon, Councilmember Higgins.
Excuse me, Gordon. Would that be done in through staff or planning and zoning, or how are those options? Where do they fit in?
The RSL district is a rezoning that would go through P&Z and council.
Okay.
The alternative landscape plan is administrative action that happens through the zoning administrator.
Great, thank you.
We've also introduced a concept called community designators. And the idea for this is that without altering a person's entitlement regarding their specific land use for their specific zoning, we can provide alternate development standards that are associated with that to create urban areas, to create suburban areas, then create kind of a hybrid or mixed area that's with that. We would do this basically by saying that the property remains its base zoning district. By adding this designator to it, We can sit here and say that the buildings shall be built up on the street in more of an urban context and have a differing design standard, so you get different characters and create some areas that have a sort of a hybridized urban core or areas that retain more of a suburban character, so you don't have the same thing on every corner and get some monotony that might be created that way. We believe this will end up with differing places, and you'll get more creative designs that come from this. These apply both to multiple residents and commercial districts. In housing variety and choice, one of the things we've done is we've gone back to the historic densities that were present for multiple residence uses in the 1980s, and they've increased across the board for that. We've also introduced a new R5 district, which would allow up to 43 units an acre. That would require rezoning. We've also provided an option for by-right residential uses that's still subject to council site plan review. But if they follow certain protocols, then they would be able to have, in addition to their commercial property and their commercial uses, they would be able to mix that opportunities for multiple residents on the same site and get a little bit more efficiency working in terms of how the use property is used. We also have the new residential small lot district. We think this will be able to replace several of the PADs the council has seen and make that a more predictable process by going up front and telling the developer, if you do this, then you can do this. And there's a predictable outcome at the end going into that. We've also offered the new MX district.
Councilman Higgins.
Thank you. The by right residential uses and commercial would be more of to encourage like mixed use development. Not like, oh, we can put residents in these commercial areas. Commercial would be already established, and we'd be adding some higher density. Okay, great.
And in addition to that, the type of densities that are there by right are what most people would refer to as mid-range densities. They're not the highest densities available for multiple residents. They stay within the 15 to 25 range.
But they could be, depending on the usage, and that would just come through you, and we would decide then if it was appropriate or not?
Yeah, the council determined that they still wanted to have a hand in the review of that. So it would still go through the P&Z and City Council process. The difference being is that the council's reviewing as a site plan review instead of a rezoning case.
Okay, great. Thanks.
In terms of economic growth, we've reorganized our industrial districts, and we've placed more of an employment emphasis on that. In addition to that, after listening to our industrial employers that are already in the city, we've created a new HI district that has a tendency to be more exclusive toward industrial uses and tends to sit here and limit the amount of commercial activity that may take place in the property. Again, we've talked about the infill sites. We believe that'll help with economic growth. We have the PC district that's been used both in the First Solar case, in the Gaylord property, as well as the Mesa Proving Ground site, where the large properties, 160 acres or more, would actually come in and negotiate with the city a zoning code, as well as development requirements that go along with that. Again, the mixed-use districts, and as well as creating an emphasis on the quality of the projects that go in, that we reward quality through incentives such as increased density or administrative options as opposed to going through public hearings. We've also tried to create some starter and small business options. That includes some of the reuse, for example, of residential properties that are on Ontario streets, going through a special use instead of a rezoning process to authorize those properties. In addition to that, we've also talked about authorizing small-scale retail or small-scale restaurant uses in office districts where previously we haven't been able to do that. And in terms of environmental quality, again, mixed use, that was a theme we heard throughout our process. Things like trying to encourage riding bus and transit. We actually discount parking requirements when they're in proximity to light rail, bus rapid transit, or to buses. We've come up with alternative vehicle parking requirements. For example, if right now everything's based on an arithmetic scale, if you have a restaurant, you have a dentist office, and you have a retail use, you have to park the restaurant, you have to park the dentist office, you have to park the retail, and you have to add those things together. We have shared parking analysis now under this code, where we can sit here and make use of time of day, and if the dentist has their peak period in the morning and the restaurant has their peak period in the evening, they can share the same parking space without having to necessarily create additional asphalt.
Thank you. Thank you. I think about that every time I go past these commercial centers and see acres of asphalt that has never been parked on. And, thank you.
I don't think I've ever heard clapping for as long ago before. Making me misty here.
Dave's tearing up.
I think this is actually accumulation of what we've been hearing, because it's really great to hear common sense and reality play out in proposed regulations, and that's how I sort of characterize what's going on here. It's good. So thank you.
Again, the infill development sites, which we've talked about. Administrative flexibility. Again, the concurrent reviews, the idea that we can sit here and schedule a DR case and a P&Z case and review that at the same time. The consolidated applications, oftentimes, for example, gas stations, when they come through and they require rezoning, instead of having to require both the Board of Adjustment review as well as a P&Z review and a City Council review, we can have the P&Z board hear that at the same time and not have to go to the Board of Adjustment. So it becomes one application all the way through for, in essence, the same case. Again, increased administrative options, the alternative landscape plan, the shared parking analysis, other types of things where we're not taking folks through variances. And then temporary use permits. Now, as it stands right now, there are issues related to this. In the final draft, the only two temporary use permits relate to swap meets and farmers markets. We don't have temporary uses to the great extent that we have, because we have some additional wrangling that we have to do regarding the temporary use of a property with a use that's already allowed in that district on a permanent basis. And trying to distinguish between a temporary use and a permanent use gets a little difficult. So we have to sit here and think through that a little bit more.
But what
we would propose to do is to sit here and continue to work through that as a staff and then bring that to you as a very early amendment, possibly in the fall.
Yeah, and I think we have two separate issues here in the definition of temporary use. You have temporary use that's really temporary use, maybe for weeks or even months, or maybe short term, less than 2 years maybe. And then you have the other type of situation that we talked about just the other night that's going to come up primarily in the Gateway area as we develop into that, where the temporary use may literally be years. And I think those are very different scenarios that have the same administrative issue, that you have to allow some sort of use that at some point in time runs its course. The question being, you know, how do you, on the longer term, I think we really need to look at that, because it's a slightly different scenario, because you may have, the other night, for example, a boat RV park that may be there for 10 years or 15 years until that property is ripe for the high-quality development that we think is going to happen, versus, you know, the swap meet or something like that may be literally a 1 or 2 or 6 month or whatever it is. So I'm hoping that as you go through that wrangling that we really look hard at the situation out there in the Gateway area. Otherwise, we're going to come up with the same situation we had the other night. I didn't get a sense that anyone's real happy with that possibility that we're going to be faced with hard zoning that we then might have to come back and redo later. I don't think anyone thinks that's good for that area long term.
Yeah, there's some ideas that have been tossed about, but there's nothing firm yet. We need to go through the legal vetting process before we bring those up.
Look forward to that.
Okay. An alternative landscape plan. Again, this allows modifications in landscaping that either meet or exceed the landscape requirements. There are certain design principles that we actually review these against, and we're looking for things like innovative design, the use of native vegetation, the variety of plants, or making use of the topography that's in the area and trying to enhance that. In the parking and loading, again, shared parking analysis, we talked about that. Again, parking reductions adjacent to transit. Alternative compliance, for example, the use of valets, transit access, any kind of special circumstance related to land use, because, for example, senior housing. We've also included bicycle and motorcycle requirements so that, again, we have alternative transportation that's available, and you can have ability to park that. That takes less room, less area. If that's present, then maybe they can meet their parking requirements that way. And then the last goal that we have is to actually enact the general plan policies. And believe it or not, the overhaul of the zoning code was a general plan policy. We're actually fulfilling the general plan by going through the actual overhaul of the zoning code. We've aligned our zoning districts more closely with our general plan policies. We often reference the general plan in the review of our discretionary applications. We ask the applicants to show us how they're meeting the general plan and the goals of the general plan. We've developed mixed-use options, which is a large goal of that, as well as recognized transit-oriented development and the reorganization of our industrial districts to try to encourage additional employment and try to sit here and rebalance that mix of residential units as well as the number of jobs that are in the city.
Gordon, Councilmember Higgins.
Thank you, Mayor. I missed the parking question really quick, but okay. Before we go too far away, are we looking at when the scenario of the electric plug-in car with the credit card meter that's going to be there shortly and maybe have that somewhere also, because I'm sure someone's going to ask for, you know, what your rules are around that?
We actually have a standard set in the zoning ordinance for electric parking.
Okay.
We don't require it as mandatory. Sure. It's voluntary for its installation within. Okay. But if it's there, then we have a standard for the size of that as well as the proximity to the actual electric connection.
Great. Thank you.
Before we get too far into this, I wanted to introduce Chuck Gunn. Chuck is one of our the folks who have been helping us create links in the zoning code. And part of the ease of use question that we have, let me kind of end this real quick. Let's see. Chuck's been working on creating links in the code. And so if you were to sit here and look at the zoning code online, then, for example, if you take a look, this is the actual web page that we have now. And so, for example, if you were a person who coming in and trying to build a commercial property, we got to update some of our software for this particular computer. But what we have are these hyperlinks. And the idea is that whenever there's a term or a land use or something that might involve a different section of the zoning ordinance, then what we can do, for example, here's the use table. And if you're interested in multiple residence develop and you wanted to find out what the definition of that is, if you click on this, again, then up it takes you immediately to the definition of multiple residence. Then we can take you back to that. Again, this is the plugins a little bit, making this a little bit rough. But again, we go to the table, and for example, there's a section of the code that it basically takes what's the additional use regulations that are related to that. Well, if we click on this, then that section that talks about residential uses in commercial districts pops up. And it tells you what the additional requirements are. So the idea basically is, again, that through a click, through a couple of clicks on the website, you can get a complete picture of what the requirements are for that particular development of the site. And we believe this will make it a lot easier for folks to go through the actual zoning ordinance itself. And again, we've created several hyperlinks that are in here, references back to the table. If you want to understand what the site plan review process is, again, if we click on this, up pops the chapter that talks about site plan review. So we feel it would be much more easier to navigate the zoning ordinance through the use of these hyperlinks. Any questions about that at all? Chuck's
Mayor,
done a real
Mayor,
nice job for this.
Vice Mayor?
Gordon, one of the things that we wanted placed in this zoning, and we've done it in our strategic plans, are more graphic representations so people get a visual sense of what areas are supposed to look like. Is that also included on the online hyperlinks?
I don't know if the graphics are necessarily in the hyperlinks. In the code itself, when you come, you have to page down through the table here.
Right now, that looks riveting.
I appreciate that.
I need pictures, man. I'm telling
you. Yeah.
There you go, one.
But if we talk about building form standards, we have a picture like this. We talk about how to create minimum setbacks and the description of what's a build-to line versus a setback. We have a graphic regarding that. There are, again, The use section is probably.
You do realize that a picture would have been worth 1,000 of those words.
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay.
Was it like 31 probably?
It's just I decided to work with the graphics, particularly on the Gateway Strategic Development Plan, that has really helped people visualize the types of changes we're expecting. So the more we can include those, I think the better and easier the code will be to read.
But we've got these are in various places. For example, this talks about it describes live-in or live-work projects.
Go to the next one.
Okay. Again, we're trying to give examples of how they can do that. This one describes building height.
That's
and
great.
How that's measured.
Yeah, we just went through, and I know it's different. The Gateway-specific plan is a little bit different because can focus in on something. But I'll tell you, when we were talking First Solar, and you had people who came and say, to ask if that kind of use was anticipated on that piece of property, it was so nice to be able to go to the picture and say, oh, yeah, here we go. And, I mean, that was the end of the discussion right there because graphically you could connect the two dots,
right,
which was much easier than reading through something and then arguing over whether it was, you know, the potato or potato, one of the two, with an E or without an E, or tomato with tomato or tomato. I'll get it right one of these days.
Wrong
example, but you've got the big – everyone knew what I was talking about.
There's several illustrations that are in the code now, and we'll be looking for opportunities to insert more as it comes up also and bringing those to you. In terms of there's a couple of last-minute items we wanted to talk to you about. And one of those had to do with you received a letter from Circle G Properties regarding large-format retail industrial districts. We wanted to we had an opportunity to talk with their representatives, and I believe we've got an understanding now that they understand where we're at, and I don't think they no longer oppose what we're talking about. But real quick, what we were doing is basically saying, under the current code, you can get a council use permit for a large format retail use in the M1 and the M2 district. What we're saying now is that you can't do it. You can still do it in the M1 or the replacement of the M1, which is the LI district. You can't do it in the GI or in the M2 district. And part of that has to do with the concern that we heard from the industrial employers basically saying that they wanted to basically stay away from circumstances where they might have incompatible uses. And they wanted to minimize those opportunities. Once we explained that, and we believe that the Circle G folks are on board with that now.
Well, and I think this is a good indication as we go through and implement this, even with all the vetting and all everything, you're going to find individual circumstances where there may, you know, there's going to be pieces that we say we have to clarify, or there may even be gaps that we didn't anticipate. And, you know, that's going to play out as this gets implemented. And,
sure,
you know, we'll have to go back, I'm sure, and tweak it here and tweak it there.
It's a living document.
This will not be the last time you have somebody who thinks that we've somehow changed or limited or degraded their property, and that's just to be expected.
Yeah. The design review board had some questions related to lighting and illumination, so they asked us to go back and try to enhance that part of the code so that we basically provide additional direction to the development community about through the nighttime architecture. And so we went back and did that. We created a limitation so to make sure that these regulations don't apply to single family and duplexes. We came up with a method to try to control light trespass on a property so we can limit how light might affect the surrounding properties as well as light spillage. We asked them to make sure that the pedestrian paths were illuminated during the evening hours, that they used design fixtures that were harmonious with the design of the project, something that was not strong contrast to that. That there would be a gradual transition of exterior lighting levels so you don't go from very dark to very bright and have that kind of temporary blindness that goes along with that. We wanted them to highlight the building entries so the building entries were kind of the focus of these things at night, as well as trying to enhance the design itself by calling out the texture of and the relief of the building itself, to call it, to highlight the details of what they're trying to, of the actual design itself. So, and the design review board thought this was a good idea, and they recommended approval. We showed it to P&Z, and P&Z also agreed with this. The DR board and P&Z added a couple of criteria for alternative landscape plan. They wanted to allow for creative designs under aerial power lines. This is a concern of the P&Z board, that aerial power lines have a tendency to limit trees. Oftentimes you can kind of see how trees end up getting pruned in odd and unusual shapes because the tree is too large for the area it's intended to grow. And so to try to address that, the board thought we can use the alternative landscape plan to address that question and come up with different plant materials that actually fit in that circumstances and reward the developer for doing that.
Well, I always wondered if a landscape architect actually ever walked out and walked the site before designing it, because I've never understood how you could sit there and there are these lines obviously 20 feet above the ground and they plan for a 40-foot tree there. It just, and you see it happen time after time.
Oh, hopefully we'll try to address that.
Maybe we could add a checklist that says, have you actually stood on site? Is there a power line? Did you take this into consideration before planting this tree?
That's something we might be able to add to the review.
I mean, that sounds silly, but I honestly believe that should be a question, because I really think that a lot of times they honestly don't understand the site, or else there's no way that they would, because I know they understand plants. I can't figure out why they would ever plant a tree underneath a power line that is that type of tree. And if we're requiring that, then shame on us.
Well, and you know, oftentimes that's what's happening, but there's actually a plant list that's put out by SRP and APS that recommends certain types of trees when you have a power line situation. Oftentimes they may not necessarily look at that list.
Well, maybe we could on our application literally put a question: is there a power line on this site? Does it run down the area you're going to plant things? I mean, I'm dead serious, because we keep repeating that mistake, even on new developments. Just went one by one the other day where there's these nice little trees that I know are going to go right up into this the power lines right above it, and those power lines are not going to get buried because they're pretty high voltage power lines. So I'm serious that we probably should have that kind of checklist on our plan review.
Okay, well, we'll add that. The thing about alternative landscape plan. The other one would be that through the DR board, that the actual design of the landscape would take into account the maturation of the plants as well as the long-term health of the plants. And so if they do things, for example, like using structure soiled next to paved areas, or they take into account the exposure of the plant itself, and so plants that can handle direct bright west sun are planted in those areas, and plants that don't like direct white west sun are not planted in those areas, we can take those into account, and that helps basically create a more lush landscape. We didn't increase the number. Right when we started this through the alternative landscape plan, there were 9 criteria, and the idea was that you meet 6 of those 9 and then you could get your alternative landscape plan approved. We kept it at 6, and so we increased the menu options, but the number in order to receive approval is still set at 11. Again, this is voluntary, it's not mandatory. They can choose to go on this if they want to, or they can go by code. They have an option with this. And we believe this will allow the designer to address the context of the site through more creative design of the landscape. Live entertainment. We had received during our vetting process several complaints from residents, particularly in the Dobson Ranch area, about restaurants that had brought in live entertainment. They were within 300 feet of the residents, and they wanted some sort of sound attenuation. So staff developed a special use permit option for those live entertainment if they're within 500 feet of a residential district. And the purpose of this SUP review was not to sit here and discourage live entertainment, but to sit here and to review it for sound attenuation. If it was somebody who was doing poetry reading, then we probably would not need a lot of sound attenuation. But if someone was playing amplified music, then we might. The Planning and Zoning Board felt that this was an unnecessary hurdle, and they felt it was an overreaction. And so they recommend actually deleting this requirement. And so the amended final draft that you have before you, it's not in there. It has been deleted. However, if the council was interested for some reason in reinstating it, we could take a look at that too. Okay. I don't see anybody's. Okay. We'll leave it out. Then, again, our vetting process, we went to Design Review Board on March 2nd and April 6th, the Planning and Zoning Board on March 23rd and April 20th, the Historic Preservation Committee on April 28th and May 26th. Again, we received unanimous recommendations from all three bodies, which are required before you actually consider this. We would ask, if you believe that we're ready to go with this also, that you would add this to the agenda for June 27th for introduction of ordinance and then possible adoption on July 7th.
Okay. Any other questions? Yeah, Councilmember Higgins.
Thank you. Are there other public meetings scheduled, or did you do your fair share? I know you did a lot, so
In my opinion, I think we're ready to go.
Okay.
And the council meetings are public meetings. I mean, if someone wants to show up, they can show up in the meetings.
So, and this is only available online. If someone wanted to print it out, they'd print it out themselves. But they would miss out.
They could do that, or we've also placed copies in all four libraries, as well as placing three copies with the city clerk's office.
Awesome. So someone could go into the library and ask for the zoning code.
And they could look at it the old-fashioned way, yes.
But then they wouldn't have the access to the hyperlinks, which are a benefit.
Yeah, if you're trying to sit here and navigate the code, yeah.
Unless they have hyper fingers.
But if you look at it in the notebook format, we have tabs. If they need to look at Chapter 31, Chapter 31 is listed, and it should be fairly easy to navigate the old-fashioned way.
And if they wanted to actually have their own personal copy, can someone purchase it somewhere?
No, we haven't published these or printed these out for sale.
Okay.
They would have to print that. They could come to us. We would print it out, but we would charge them for that.
Right.
But we'd probably have to get some lead time before we would to do that.
Great. Thank you.
Councilmember Kavanaugh, I think you had a comment. No, we were talking, having a sidebar conversation here, but I just wanted to make sure you commented on what you would whisper to me.
Gordon, I want to compliment you on all the patience. This is really a long-term process, and I appreciate the prior council for working with you to initiate it. And what the mayor and I were talking about is this is really a legacy kind of project, because if the city had had this 20 years ago, the landscape of our community would be very different, and in just a whole variety of ways. And I'm looking forward to passage. As I told the mayor, I said, really, this is probably one of the most important things I will have ever voted on in terms of effect on the community long term as a council member. So I just wanted to express my appreciation for all the work, all the patience, all the presentations, all the community meetings. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember. And you know, this really is cutting edge. Also, I one of the other things we were talking about is this is not something which a lot of communities have done or are doing around the country. They're talking about it, but I got to give staff and everyone credit for moving forward with something which is pretty bold. I mean, we're going into new territory here. We're literally coming up with a plan that grants flexibility, that hopefully understands how our city has changed, that truly understands the new needs. We have huge areas that before were suburban development that are now infill, and this approach accommodates, I believe, that reality, and also truly does make it easier for development. When I say make it easier, it does it without lowering standards, and I think that's a great accomplishment, that you can emphasize standards and also reduce regulatory restrictions. Because I mean, as we just talked about on that SUP, I think it was very wise of the Planning and Zoning to say that if you require someone to go through that SUP, that is a hindrance, that is an obstacle. And I think the whole approach of this code takes that we want people to be able to to go beyond the minimum, and we want to reward them when they do that. We want to encourage them to do that, and the best way of doing it is to be more flexible. And across the board, I think this this code does that. I'm sure, as I've said before, we're going to find out there are parts that have to be tweaked, but I think from an overall standpoint, you did an excellent job, and I appreciate all the input from all the different committees and the citizens and the stakeholders. This really was a good example of how to do something really, really nice and comprehensive, and as Councilmember Cavanaugh said, one that in ways people really don't comprehend is a community changer. It really is. Hopefully the development community will learn to live within it and understand the kind of upside potential it does give them, and that will encourage investment, especially into our infill and older areas. So thank you. Any more questions or comments? Okay. Look forward to that introduction on the 27th and finalizing it meeting after that. Thank you. Okay. Reports on conferences and attended. Nothing. Oh, Councilmember Higgins.
A point of personal privilege. I want to wish my husband a happy 27th year anniversary today. And yes, we did get married when we were like 9 or 10.
9 or 10.
Yeah.
And we would like to congratulate Jack for hanging in there. 27 long years.
You're right, man.
I just quote my wife. He is a saint. He is a saint. He's right up there with my wife.
Saint Kim.
That's right. I'd like to, yesterday, Councilmember Higgins and Councilmember Richens and I attended the Valley Hotel and Resort Association luncheon at the Phoenician in Phoenix, which was a gathering of the our hotel and resort industry with city officials, and you know, got some good news. The lodging industry had a fairly good winter. We're still not back there, but you know, it was generally positive as far as where the industry is headed, which certainly bodes well for us and our industry and some of the projects we have on hold right now that hopefully will improve even more, so that with room rates going up and with occupancies going up, that will reach the point where some of these projects that have been deferred or delayed can move forward. So that was a good get together, and it was nice getting together with other mayors and council members and owners and operators of the resorts throughout the city or throughout the valley. So, Vice Mayor.
Bad timing on that one. Two events I attended. One was a ribbon cutting, Superstitions Farms, which is anybody who lives in my neighborhood can smell it. It's over on Hawes Road, just south of the power line. Mr. Brady lives in my neighborhood, and he's laughing. Well, they now have a farmer's market. It goes on every Thursday night, 4:30 to 7:30, so you don't have to drive all the way down to Queen Creek for one. You can get it right off of Hawes Road, just south of the power lines. Right side of the road, or west side of the road, cows. Left side of the road, no cows. I can smell where the cows are. But it's a great event, and they run a neat little farm there with, they have takeout dinners and rides. I think they're horses, not cows, but who knows. So that was a good event. The other one was Amputees Across America.
Now I know why you need pictures.
I need pictures.
Cows,
horses. I'm hoping you ride the horses and not the cows, but I didn't hang around for
dinner.
I'm just telling you, you can smell the cows. But you know what? They don't complain about airport noise. This is a good thing. Amputees Across America had an event at one of our the Health South Rehabilitation Hospital, which is over by AT Still. Amputees Across America do cycling. These are folks who either had a traumatic injury, one was a diabetic, and they ride across America raising funds and raising the spirits of folks who are in these rehabilitation hospitals. They also highlight the importance of places like Health South Rehab Hospitals in Mason across the country and improving the quality of life
for patients who have suffered heart attacks, strokes, or debilitating injuries, and really bringing back their quality of life. So it was a great event. It was fun talking to those guys. They are fantastic. Thank you, Mayor.
Thanks, Vice Mayor. Okay, Mr. Brady.
Mayor and Council, or members of the Government Affairs Committee, there'll be a committee meeting right after this study session. And then Friday, June 10th, again, the coffee with council member at the Hilton. And I did confirm with Gary, it's going to be lots of good food, too. next Monday, the 13th, at 8:30 in the morning, there's a Community and Cultural Development Committee meeting. And then just a little bit later that morning, we'll have the groundbreaking for Fire Station 219. That'll be at 10 a.m. Signal Butte and Elliott. Our next study session is Thursday, June 16th. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Crocker, any requests to speak from the public?
No request, Mayor.
Great. I have a motion to adjourn from Vice Mayor, second from Councilmember Kavanaugh. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you very much.